This is the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. On demand.
What's going on, y'all? This is DJ DMD, and y'all are checking out the Brad Gilmore Show on demand right here.
What's going down? It's your homie Dope Easy, the Southeast Beast, and make sure you tune in to the Brad Gilmore Show.
Hi, this is Booker T, five-time WCW champion, and you're listening to the Brad Gilmore Show.
Now, can you get that, sucker?
On demand.
On demand.
On demand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show.
On demand.
On demand.
On demand.
We are here again. Another episode for you. Who is Nick Greer? Is a question you might ask. We're going to find out today on the Brad Gilmore Show on demand, but it took us long enough to get into the studio, right, Motai?
Right.
Monty's looking at me so mad. I know, Monty.
We have to have a full episode getting on you about me standing in the hallway just like you did me when I was late that time. Right, Motai? Hey, we need to get him.
Hey, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't Motai's fault. We have a band member who just couldn't get it together and got us locked out of our studio.
No name dropping.
But you know it's not me or Motai, so there's only three other people it could be. And I'm going to give you another hint. He's not black. So we narrowed it down that way. But we finally got in after like an hour, it felt like, sitting in the hallway. Got a great interview with Nick Greer done. He's got a new record coming out called Heart on Fire, which he's really jazzed up about because I'm really happy about it. If I'm jazzed up about it because of him talking, I know how jazzed up he must be about this album.
Jazzed up too.
And we actually have some nice intellectual stuff talked about today on the show.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Did.
We switched it up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
You know? But we got real deep, you know, as deep as a hair follicle might get. But insider.
And if anybody has any comments on it, they should leave it on there on the podcast.
Yeah, you can comment.
Definitely
rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars if you think we're worthy of it.
We want the feedback.
Yeah, go listen to us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and BradGilmore.podbean.com. All right, and I just really like this show. I really like the direction we're going in. I loved having Nick Greer on today. It was great. And maybe if y'all stay tuned through the whole episode, there might be a little Easter egg at the end of it. All right? That's just all I'm saying. We had a nice talk about strippers in the hallway. I'm just saying you might get an Easter egg at the end of this episode.
With some strippers.
If I get clearance on it. So with that being said, are you ready, Motai?
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
No,
I'm
not ready.
Are you not? You're not
no,
ready.
No,
you're not ready for DJ Motai's Monday Morning Music.
No,
Mix
I'm not
the
ready.
Show
I'm not gonna do it today.
You're not gonna do it.
No,
it's all right. You know,
it's
you
right.
can fall off.
They can get an Easter egg.
They'll get an Easter egg,
but they're not
egg,
gonna
though.
Get a Monday Motai, whatever it is,
whatever your segment's called. But y'all stay tuned for whatever's about to play, and then we're gonna be back with our interview with Nick Greer, also known as I'll let him tell you. So Nick Greer will be back. Stay tuned. Brad Gilmore Show
on demand.
Or do man.
As soon as I walked up into this place, I could smell gasoline in the air. The floor was made of lavender flavored alligators, and then nothing was there. As soon as I walked up into this place, I can smell gasoline in the air. The floor is made of lavender flavored alligators. And then I think as I am always worried about my money. It's always in my head. How many people do you know just like me? And just like you, always fussing and fighting and feigning. Always watching TV, cause watching is easy. Always in a hurry, gotta hurry. Get up to everyone who is just like me and just like you. Cause I know he's got a soul, I know he's got a soul. You can see it in his eyes, oh yeah. You can see
watching TV, cause watching is easy. Always in a hurry, gotta hurry, gotta hurry, gotta hurry. Catch up to everyone who is just like me, and just like me. Cause I know he's got a soul, I know he's got a soul. You can see it in his eyes, oh yeah. You know she's the thunder in the sky.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Brad Gilmore Show.
On demand.
It's
Monty.
Sorry.
Monty. It's okay. You want me to try it again, Monty, for you? Or do you just want to breathe
okay,
by
on
it?
On demand.
No, you can. All right, whatever. We're going to get it 1 week. You're going to get it right. You're going to get it right
I
one week.
I got it last week.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
Did you? Yes. Did she?
You have amnesia. You're getting old.
Whatever. Brad. Whatever. We have a good show for you today. After a delay of time that I'll get into maybe later on the intro. But we have a good show. We have the one and only Nick Greer with us today. How you doing, Nick?
Hey,
I'm good.
Nick.
Very, very good.
You know, okay, I was told someone yesterday, I was like, yeah, I'm going to have Nick Greer on my show tomorrow. We're going to do like an interview. And they're like, who's Nick Greer again? And I was like, you know, he's got red hair, a big bow tie, and wears a clown nose. They're like, is Nick Greer a clown?
Love clown nose.
I was like,
that's a fair question. I think that's fair.
I definitely described a clown to her. But how you doing today? Everything good with you?
I'm doing really good. I've been having a lot of fun with you guys in the hallway.
Yeah, I know. We had a nice like hour discussion in the hallway before we got the roll.
And he brought us a treat. Like,
he brought y'all a treat.
We've been on
Brad.
Yeah,
and bow tie.
I bought Brad's tea.
Yeah. Nick bought my Arizona tea, so I do thank you for that.
It's less than a dollar, but it makes it.
No, it's here, just a little.
It counts. So, man, I've actually wanted to have you on the show for a while, man. I know we've known each other for several years. Mm-hmm. You said in the hallway you've known me since I was like 18 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Where did we meet? You remember?
I honestly think that it was me either trying to book you or running into you. Oh, Day in a Dream. Never mind.
Oh, yeah.
It was back when you were, I met you through the Nice Guys. So the Day in a Dream with the We More Mask, the Out and About.
Yeah.
You guys were just always there, and I was always at the shows. And that was right around the time that I started playing shows with the Nice Guys and working very, very closely with them. And so I'm pretty sure that's where we met, is through Day in a Dream, specifically.
Specifically.
And then, of course, you were Hive Society and all that kind of stuff, so.
You're coming in a little low, Nick. You might have to just hold it.
Okay.
You might have to hold it.
Or just put it closer.
I'll just put it right in my shit.
There you go.
That's good. He's a performer. He knows how to work.
You know how to do it.
He knows how to do this.
Rock and roll.
But, well, okay.
Make love to the mic.
Where'd you meet?
Make love.
Where'd you meet the beautiful Ashley Amani?
At a Debonair event.
Yeah, I think
it was her,
at Debonair?
I thought y'all may have known each other prior.
No, I was just walking around handing out clown noses, and she is.
I said, can I have a clown nose, please? I was like, I want to be cool with the red clown nose.
So was this the birthday? Was this on your birthday?
Yeah.
This was my
birthday.
This
is the shot that we were talking about.
But actually, I did see you perform prior to that.
Okay.
And blew my mind. And I was like, man, that dude is good. Like, normally, no disrespect to other artists, but like, if they don't catch my attention, I'll go outside and mingle with people and stuff like that. But when he was on stage, I was like, hold on. Let me go back in. I played the piano. This guy's killing it. He's entertaining the crowd. Like, I'm all for entertainers, not just vocals.
And you had a slamming dress on. That helped. that helped a lot.
That kept my attention.
I guess that's what deserved my birthday drink.
Yeah. That's probably exactly why Nick Greer's a fly guy. I've learned in this you know, couple hours that we spent together now, he's a fly dude.
He has some tricks up his sleeve.
He's a ladies man. Yeah, would you say
literally got tricks?
I'd say I'm a what's that word when you're really close to your mama's boy?
A mama's boy. Yes.
There's a difference.
There is a difference.
No.
So what do you think the difference is between a ladies man and a mama's boy?
A ladies man is a guy that tries. A mama's boy is just was raised that way, and women
you
are just attracted.
Connect with women.
Yeah, that's the best way I can describe it. So
I think of a ladies man more like a womanizer kind of.
I was going to say that.
When I hear ladies man, I'm thinking, okay, this guy, he's a player. He doesn't really care about women.
It sounds negative to me. Maybe that's a pussy thing
but
to say.
But a mama's
boy, sounds...
it seems like you care about women. You have a soft spot for women because you are a mama's boy. So
and
you
mama
know.
Boy implies that I salute with my mom, which I don't.
But just put that out there, ladies.
I don't know. You got to be my mom to understand.
Yeah,
and I've met your mother. She's come out to Debonair Lounge as well.
Yeah. She's a big fan of Booker T. So when she found out Booker T was going, she was like, "Okay, so where's this place at?"
So she's a big fan of Booker T. How does that come about?
You know, one of the earliest memories I had when I was a child was my mom taking me to like early, you know. Early Hulk Hogan and like Jake the Snake and all that kind of stuff, wrestling matches. So I don't know. Like, I guess we just kind of, we're Southern, we're from Corpus, and they like wrestling. And I've never been like a huge fan, but I just grew up around Booker and she just knows who the hell that is. I don't really know.
She loves some him. Kind That's of it.
So, like,
I want to meet him.
Yeah, like when Second Generation came around and, you know, Hulk Hogan went Hollywood, like Booker was there. So
yeah.
I remember that was so long ago, but I remember watching Booker.
So she was already a fan of Booker before you were.
Probably.
Wow.
Wow, that's a long time. We're trying to get this boom stand working. I just don't think we're...
It's fine. It looks like it's coming in low, but when you listen to it, it'll be fine.
Okay.
No, I'm just going to help you out.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Now, take us back. You said you're from Corpus. You're one of the most talented musicians I've ever met and seen perform, like Monty said, amazing performer. Where does it start for you?
In Houston. I mean, I was born in Corpus, but we didn't spend a lot of time there. But I am white trash all the way. so is my family. It is what it is.
I got a pretty redneck family too.
Yeah, and I embrace it.
Okay, time out. In Texas, what does redneck mean?
Like hick?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't.
Does it mean racist?
Well,
no.
I mean, no, but it's like the nicest way of saying you're white trash. Because white trash is actually pretty mean. But if you're white trash, I feel like you can say you're white trash.
Is it kind of like when black people say nigga?
Yeah.
It's, it's very close. Yeah. It's similar. It's very close. Because if you were to call my like me a redneck in front of my family, it would be pretty offensive.
Right.
But if we're
right.
talking about each other, just like you don't talk about my mom. I can talk about my mom all I want.
It's my mom.
But if you talk about her, it's like that.
That's
so,
a problem.
Yeah.
Like,
gotcha.
Unless you are
gotcha.
From the South and you are a redneck or you have family that has, if you got family with a gun in their truck, with a truck, first of all, and a gun in it, and a Confederate flag, that's a redneck.
Yeah.
But unless you got family that's like that, then you've seen your corn around saying redneck this, redneck that.
Got it.
Then it's offensive.
Okay, got it.
So.
It
does get offensive. But you had a. Say real Southern family.
Real Southern family. And we moved around all over Texas. Arlington, Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio. I lived in Austin for a little bit. So I grew up in Texas. And then
around what year did you land in Houston?
Probably in the fifth grade. So I've been here about 14, 15 years. I've left and come back.
So you're
left and come back. But
okay.
Yeah,
so
no,
you're Houstonian.
Houston's my home. Like,
but where does music come into play for you?
I was a sicker kid when I was younger, and I spent a lot of time in the hospital, and I was in a hospital on Christmas when I was 10, and my mom, at the time, all I wanted to do was write and be a storm chaser. It didn't really make a lot of sense, but my mom just surprised me one day with a keyboard. I never asked, never said I want to play or anything like that. And I just remember waking up, and because she was tired, so she kicked me out of my hospital bed. And
wow!
So I remember getting up and just like touching it, and just it feeling like, you know, it was like a little troll jumped in my head. I always describe it this way because it's exactly how it feels. It's like somebody jumped in my head and turned on a light switch, and then at the same time fused my body with the piano. That's the only way I can explain it. So it was like taking a breath, like for the first time. And ever since then, I just fell in love with it. Never went to school. Tried. Never had any formal training. Nobody told me what to do. I would just was like, I'm going to play the piano. This is what I want to do. Like,
so you taught yourself how to play?
Yeah. Between 10 and 14, I knew like two songs. My friends hated me because I played them shits.
Same thing over and over.
Obsessively. And then at 14, I remember I just from practicing all the time, I remember just switching around one of the chords and be like, oh my God, I can do whatever I want. It's like, I don't got to play the rules. And that was it for me. Like, that was right at the beginning of high school. And I remember at 14 saying to myself, my goal is now to be able to pay the rent by making music by the time I'm 27. And
this was at 14?
14. I remember it was weird, man. I was a weird kid. But I remember specifically sitting and being on the bus, going to school, and like being like that kid. I didn't want to go to school, but I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get through this because I already know what I want to do.
Yeah.
So I just looked at it as, well, I'm just going to practice this whole time I'm in school.
Yeah.
That's what I did. I would get kicked out of class and right in the hall, and I'd tell all my teachers, I'm going to pass your class, but I'm making music, like no matter what. Like,
what high school did you go to?
I went to Bel Air.
Bel Air? So. Okay. I can see that. I'm a Lamar guy, but it's okay.
Okay.
You went to Lamar. I know somebody who went to Lamar.
Oh, that's small.
And Bel Air in L.A. would be like, oh, you went to Bel Air. Very nice.
Well, Bel Air, like, that's pretty much the only school in the city that could compete with us. Like, you guys were pretty much our rivals.
Lamar.
Yeah. That was
my closest friend.
Because y'all was equally as big. I think. I mean, y'all probably went 2,000-3,000 kids at
about
the school.
About 3,000, 4,000.
Was Lamar across the street from a private school?
Yeah.
It's right around the corner.
St. John's.
Right.
So I had a friend that went
St.
to
Thomas,
St.
Right?
St. John's and Lamar.
And. St. Anne's.
Thomas
is
further up.
Yeah.
But it's all pretty much on the same street.
Street. But and then I went to Pershing, which Lanier was like.
And I went to Lanier.
No kidding. Yeah. Are you? I hate you.
Rival.
Look, here's the thing I want to say about Pershing Middle School and Lanier Middle School.
Yeah.
The two worst mascots for any school ever.
Panda? What's wrong with the panda?
Why would your sports team be named after a panda?
Cardinals. What is a cardinal in Bel Air? Cardinal. What's a cardinal going to do?
No, cardinal's bad too. But here's the thing: Lanier had the worst one.
Our panda. When I think of panda, I'm like, oh, it's a bear. So cute.
Yeah, but it's a bear. It's got teeth. It's got hands.
But it only eats bamboo. But Lanier's a mascot wasn't just a dog. It was a purple pup. That was our mascot.
Oh, yeah. Y'all did have the worst mascot ever.
We were the purple pups.
What was your middle school mascot?
An iguana.
I went to a private school middle school.
I did too, but what was your mascot?
I don't think
private schools have mascots, right?
Yeah.
Ours did.
Against the
rules. We were the Bruins.
The what?
The what?
The Bruins.
What does that mean?
Bruins.
What's a Bruin?
Bear. It's a bear.
So it's another bear.
But
what's
it's not a
Bruins is a real bear.
I forgot what
this is a real life thing?
I get.
I actually went to three different schools. I've never heard of a Bruin. Three different private schools.
You never heard of UCLA Bruins? In high school, mine was Lions, so we were killing.
You Whatever. Lie. You lying.
I'm so scared.
You lying. You lie like a tiger. Anyway. Okay, so you went. So your whole time in high school and middle school and all that was just practicing.
Well, no, even in middle school, it was up until 8th grade. I was still like tornadoes. I want to chase y'all. And
why'd you want to change?
Did you see Twister?
When Twister came out, was like my brain flipped open. I was because that was like the peak of me wanting to chase tornadoes. So I remember sitting in the theater. I forget when we were watching like Jumanji or some crap or Powder. And I remember the preview coming on. I said, Mom. I was like, that's what I want to do. She's like, I know. So like, I just couldn't believe they were making a movie about tornadoes.
Yeah.
So that shit blew my mind.
Well, what about storms, though? I don't get the attraction.
I used to sit out in storms when I was little. Like, the worst the storm, I would, like, wander out into the storm. I don't know. I don't know what it was. Like, when the lightning would go, what do you like, pow? I'd be like, rah, yeah. Hit that.
It was just a rush for you.
I don't know. Like, maybe it's because I was.
He said he was weird.
I won't lie.
Well, maybe it's because I was sick and I was always stimulated all the time, so staying up late and walking out in storms.
Maybe that's why you got sick.
Maybe that's why I get sick all the time.
Fascinated by,
but I remember liking storms. No,
I remember like when Hurricane. It was like Rita or Ike came to Houston. I think it was Rita. I remember like my neighbor. Like we all stayed at my grandmother's house, and my neighbor came over. Like we were all in this one house, like 14, 15, 16 people, cats, dogs everywhere. But I just remember the night of the storm, like the wind was going crazy and trees were falling. It was a little intriguing. You're like, oh.
I was scared. Let me tell you, I had never been through a hurricane ever. I mean, I went through earthquakes, and they taught us what to do, you know, during an earthquake, but never hurricane. And then after seeing what happened with Katrina, I was freaked out because I already can't swim. So.
It was the same year that Rita came here for Katrina, but you were talking about Ike, huh?
Ike.
You're talking about Hurricane
Ike. Yeah, I was here.
Well, what was the one? Ike was the one that destroyed everything. There was one right after that that scared everybody, but nothing actually happened.
Yeah.
It was like the end of the world. Was that Rita?
I was here.
I think Rita was.
I stayed here for however many hurricanes came through.
I think
I didn't
was here
go
for
anywhere.
Rita.
Yeah,
too.
I never evacuated the city.
We looked at the news.
I was already leaving.
Fuck that.
I was in Prairie View.
All that.
So it was really wild.
Oh, you were already out. Oh yeah, it was like Mad Max, man. People were like, because they were just so scared that it was gonna. Oh, this was right after Katrina.
Yeah, so I'm saying it was.
They
after
were
Katrina,
so scared
so
that that's
like,
what was gonna happen.
Oh my
like,
gosh.
People.
But the
just,
thing about Katrina is New Orleans is a big bowl.
It's well, under, sure. Yeah, it was, it's definitely under sea level.
But it's still, I mean,
No, it's devastating, you know. But I'm saying, like, I don't think the same thing would happen to
but
Houston.
You guys are below sea level.
No, not
as
at
well.
All.
We are below sea level, but we're not a bowl.
No.
You know,
you're
New
not,
Orleans is
you're
built
not.
Like a bowl.
But people were just petrified. I mean, I only left because we had to. We had a show, so it was just a coincidence. And it's
a
not
happy coincidence.
It's not supposed to take 12 hours to get to Austin. Yeah, we were playing. I think
it took 12 hours to get to Austin.
Wow. Oh, you have no idea, bro. We smoked so much weed. It was.
Oh, I would love
it
to
was,
be in that
but
car.
It was. It looked like the end of the world. It was crazy. Like every gas station went to was just like, I mean, it looked. It just. It was crazy.
Did
I'll
you make it on
that.
Time for your show?
Yeah, like barely. We left at 7. We got there. We had load in at 6. I think we got there at fucking. Maybe 1 in the afternoon the next day.
Dang.
It was crazy. Like, wow. There was just nothing. It was standstill for almost 6-7 hours at one point.
Wow.
We were getting out of the cars, walking around. Like, it was, it looked like the end of the world. It's the best way I can describe it.
Now, okay, let me ask all y'all this. I don't think we've ever talked about it on the show. And then we'll get back to your career, Nick. But we'll get there eventually.
I would like to get to my career. That would be nice. Like, I would like to get there.
I mean, since the show is about you.
When 2012 was coming to an end, and we were approaching December 21st or whatever day it
when
was.
When everybody thought that was going to be the end of the world.
Did anyone in this room think it was actually going to be the end of the world?
I accept. I was 50-50.
Yeah,
me too. I actually stayed up.
I think that I believed it partially because I was definitely praying.
Yeah.
I was like, Lord, please. I just want to have a family. But then part of me was like, okay, they said this a million times. They said this
they said it in 2011, too.
No,
yeah.
In 2000.
Oh, Y2K.
I remember I was in, like, fifth grade. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, my God, it's the new millennium. The world's about to end. Apocalypse, all this stuff. And I'm like, okay. So after that happened this time, I was just like.
You're a little more jaded to the idea
like,
of the end
yeah,
of the world.
Yeah, okay.
But are we ignorant to think that the end of the world isn't going to happen?
No, nah, the world is not going to end. We might end, but the world,
as a species.
Yeah, the world is not going to end.
But when they said that, they meant the The world isn't going to end, but it's a new age. This world is going to end. It's time for a new world. That's what I think that meant. Because if you think about it, technology is really about to like evolve crazy.
It has been evolving. When we were younger, there were no cell phones.
There was no cell phones. We've witnessed no laptops. Nothing.
Like I remember having to. I remember when they started classes to teach you what the internet was.
Yes.
And you know,
now like, you have it in the palm of your hands.
Yeah.
And how? I mean, think if you really, really think about that. That's. I mean, there's two ways to look at it. Yeah, it's incredibly amazing, but we haven't changed at all as people. That's why we keep making the same fucking mistakes.
Yeah.
Even like in any culture, it does not matter. All that's changing is technology.
Exactly. That's it. That's what's scary.
That's all that's changing. Like,
I think technology might
and the
might
information
end our
you
world.
Get and how quickly you get it.
Like so. Some iRobot shit.
I think somebody's shit. Going to. I think if the world ends, it's going to be because some
idiot.
Some dudes in a lab right now fucking with some gene or playing with some button. And it's going to be like, whoops. Yeah. I think that's.
And
what's
they're
going
to take over. And yeah. I feel like okay, once robots and stuff is made, they're going to be.
They've already.
So
oh, they're
smart,
already past that.
You want to take over?
Don't even get me started.
It's going to be robots.
No,
zombies?
I know that they have them. I'm talking about once they're out. Like I'm saying, like once you can own them. And
yeah.
They're going to become like so intelligent that they're going to be like, we're going to run you, motherfucker.
Well, they already integrated, like Terminator, what that movie's based on, is weapons being integrated with computers. They did that 10 years ago.
Yeah, definitely.
In real life.
Yeah.
Like they have Robocop. Automated missiles that go that react based on sensories or like sensors in proximity of saying, like if Korea launches a nuke at us, there's not some dude sitting in a room right now waiting
like,
for that to happen. It's
shit.
Already set up so that it's just... And to me, that's scary. That's what I'm saying about somebody sitting in a room and just pushing a button or mixing up.
Boom. And it's like,
you know, Godzilla blood with. They're cloning glow in the dark animals in Korea or Japan or something.
They have a flying.
They're making
train
them over and over.
Somewhere.
What
flying train?
A flying train. It's like
I want to get on that.
YouTube it. It's like choo-choo. Sitting on like something that's supposed to be as small as a hair.
That's what she said.
Follicle and then.
You know what I'm saying?
No. And strong as
you ever had a hair
a diamond,
baby.
Ooh, snip.
Excuse me. Pause.
Was it like magnetized or something?
No, they're saying that it's as ooh, strong snip. As a diamond, but as small as like hair or something.
What is it? What is?
So
it,
is that the trail?
Oh,
the track. Trail? Like what it's
so
riding
it's not a
on.
Flying train.
But like a hovering.
It's flying it's like because it's. I mean, that's what they call it because it's.
It looks like
head.
It's flying.
Is that wings?
I don't know. I don't know.
But I do think technology is like a little scary. And did anyone like when I was on MySpace, right, or anything? I never thought that technology would be to where it is right now.
Yeah,
to where
me
everything's
either.
Integrated.
Black Planet. Oh my gosh! Did you know about Black Planet?
Yeah, of that course I did. Yeah. No, I didn't know about Black Planet.
I didn't know if it was just for Black people.
It's for sure for Black.
What
people.
Black Planet?
This sounds really. What's Black Planet?
Exactly. Black Planet is eHarmony. For black people.
Oh,
BlackSingles.com.
I got you.
But this was like before. It was
there's
like a black social
tube.
Network.
It was like the first social network that was like big before MySpace.
It was black. It was for black people, though.
It was black?
Black Planet?
It was called BlackPlanet.com.
Yeah. There was also other social medias, though.
I love all these.
There
like,
were, but that
super,
one was really popular.
I love these super specific like dating sites now. Like if you're looking for a Christian. Or
Christian
Mingle.
Oh, my gosh.
Cougar Living.
Match.com.
Huh? Hey. No.
Oh, you're talking about specifics.
People
are lonely.
We have one for gays, too.
People are lonely. There's a farmer's one?
There's a farm. I saw it on television yesterday.
Because I need some tomatoes.
It's like farmer something or another, but it's for farmers.
That's really funny.
Wow.
That's kind of cool,
that's
actually.
Crazy.
But how do farmers have internet? Like,
I'm like, hey, what are you growing tomorrow? I'm growing
there's
onions.
A picture screen in there if you want to get on the intranet.
Picture screen.
On the World Wide Web, we just got it installed.
But did anyone think, though, like back in those days, how powerful the internet would be?
Mm-mm,
and all the
things.
And
so.
Internet companies. You know I'm thinking? Like people making livings off of the internet. Like, it's just a weird thing.
Right now,
we're doing a podcast, which is essentially a radio program now given to you through the internet that you can listen to on your phone.
I think the internet is dope. I think that the internet has some pros and cons.
It's the best invention of the 20th
century.
It is.
It brought so much unity, and I just feel like you can.
Well, it's brought unity, but it's brought a lot of negativity.
That's what I said. It has pros and cons, but
I think like if you look on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube comments
First of all, if you have time to comment negatively on a YouTube video, you really need to get a better life.
A life, exactly.
Yeah, but don't you think those same people are saying the same things out loud, just like when we were in high school, the people that talk shit about everybody?
Yeah.
It's the same. Like the I same said, thing. Nothing has yeah. changed
and
about us.
No matter
us.
What you do,
nothing
we
has
are
changed
still
about us.
Talk.
We just have more mediums.
The thing is, we're just more exposed to it now. Now we all can see exactly how people think. What
I
people
feel bad for kids half our age, to be honest
Me
with
too.
You. Like, if yeah. I was in elementary
school, this is what they're growing up with.
If I was in middle school right now, oh, man. These kids are like
I
in
feel
trouble.
Like we're the perfect generation. Like we saw how it used to be and we
we're
grew
experiencing
up
with
now. We're experiencing it now. So yeah. It's like we got the best of both worlds.
Well, here, think about this. Is another, we were talking about this with my friend the other day. So as far as racism is concerned, our generation, if like us, the idea of homosexuals being prosecuted or not being able to get married or, you know, segregation or lynchings or anything like that or borders being built and all this, you know, all this stuff, the idea of that to us yeah. is just so irrational, right? Like, yeah. So why would you do that? That doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But the kids, but we know the difference. We at least know the history. Our parents and our grandparents are still, they still haven't let go of it. You know what I mean? But here's the thing. This younger generation, they talk about it like it was 1,000 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
That is scary.
Yeah.
They talk about it like Brown versus Board wasn't 40 years ago. They talk about it like,
well, that's because of
oh,
how
there's
it's
no more racism.
Them.
Yeah,
no, we've Obama. It's like that's what I'm saying. I fuck being a kid nowadays because the history books are like they were already messed up before, but now it's just bullshit.
Bullshit.
Man. I don't believe. I don't believe nothing I hear. I don't believe anything I see. Like, and at least we grew up. We grew up at the perfect time where we can still remember. Mm-hmm. Be like. I remember floppy disks. I remember racism. And I remember
floppy disks and racism.
No, because even with our generation,
these new kids,
it depends on where you were from.
Yeah.
What's a CD player?
In California, yeah. I didn't see racism growing up. I did not see racism. And I have friends from here that have so many stories
but
about being coming across racist.
Here's
people.
The thing for me, I didn't experience racism when I was a kid.
Me either.
But in going in schools and stuff, I never experienced it or I never witnessed mm-mm. it or anything.
You were never called white boy?
I was, yeah, well, maybe.
That's racism.
It is racism. But
you were never,
it is,
never,
it is,
never
saying,
got your, you never
like,
got your ass beat in a black neighborhood?
No,
oh,
I didn't.
Nah.
That's racism.
I didn't, though.
No,
I mean,
we didn't
yeah,
have that
like,
in California, really. Not on race.
The dumbest thing that I ever heard, you know, or saw or witnessed in my time in school relating to racism is somebody in a classroom was like, well, you know, you're a white boy, you don't understand. And
yeah.
I said, no, excuse
yeah,
me.
But, yeah.
I was like, excuse me, that's racist. And they said,
did you say it like that? That's
like,
racist.
Excuse me, I believe you're being racist.
That's racist.
No, and they said, no, that's reverse racism. And I was like, you're the dumbest person I think I've ever met in my life.
What race
life.
Was? Is this the teacher?
No. It was a black dude in my piano class.
Oh, I had a Mexican guy call
before.
Me a struck match once. I thought it was pretty.
What?
Struck match is pretty funny.
Think about it.
I made a racist comment before, and I got in trouble for it at school.
Never mind.
What'd you say?
It was really mean. And I really feel bad for
What'd
it,
you
so
say?
I do apologize.
Let's bring it out on the air right now.
In California, it was like this law. I was like, it was really, let's make me look bad.
No,
yeah,
I'm
making myself look bad right now, but I'm just going to be honest. So it was like a controversy about whether or not they should, you know, deport like Hispanic people and stuff back over the border. And
who are
like
illegal.
That. Right. But I was really angry because I was hearing stuff about how they got all these jobs and benefits and stuff and not citizens and stuff like that. And like in class, they were like jumping on my back. And this was at the time where I went to a predominantly Hispanic school. And I'm like, you know what? It's not our fault that we are not always packed in like Mexicans and having babies and all this stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
well, that was very defensive
so
of you.
you
should have.
You
was a mean ass thing to say.
It was so mean.
It was very mean. How old were you? 10?
But they were all attacking
12?
Me. No, I was in high school. A
couple
actually.
Years ago?
Oh, you were in high school, so.
I was like in 10th grade.
You should have known better.
Yeah, you knew a little better.
That was mean.
My
though.
Mom got on my ass. She wasn't even worried about the comments. She was more worried about the fact that they could have literally jumped me because it was predominantly
yeah,
Hispanic.
Because there's 30 of them packed in the classroom.
We apologize to our Hispanic listeners.
Shit, don't.
Don't do it.
They know that they pack in like.
Don't be sorry about anything. Just don't do it.
But no, I agree. Like, we are at that age to where we'll remember stuff like that. But there are people, you know, you like you said, they say, oh, it's, well, Obama. Me,
closeted racism is there's actually a bunch of books about this right now. But it's to me, it's not a good. It's just as bad because yeah. you're not just not acknowledging it. You're acting like it never fucking happened. Or it happened so long ago. Like, it's just, like, out of sight, out of mind. Which is not to say that we need to be sitting around dwelling on it and just, like, bringing it up over and over. You know, Morgan Freeman said one of the... His solution to racism was stop talking about it. Stop saying white man. Stop saying... Just stop saying this shit, this dialogue that we've, like, clung to. But it's important. I mean, there's important things about that. And it's important for... everybody to understand that there is still something going on right now.
I have a question for you guys.
What?
What do you guys feel about all races using the N-word?
I think that it's just as bad as, I mean, nigger, kike, you know, spick, whitey, cracker. It's
honky.
It's all fucked up. All of it's fucked up. Just like bitch, cunt, slut.
But I'm saying, like, I've heard white people, I've heard Asian people too, calling each other niggas.
It's a, it's just like it's just like people going to war over religion.
It's like cool.
Well, there's, I personally think that if you're not black, you should not be fucking using that word.
That word.
Eminem has spent his entire career; he's not once dropped that word.
That word.
Right.
Yeah.
So
right.
Don't fucking tell me that. Well, it's the way I grew
up like that.
It's like no, and maybe that's biased, but you know what? Fuck that, because white people were not persecuted for fucking ever.
But it's media.
And just 30 years ago, getting lynched.
It's
or
media,
10
though.
Years ago, getting lynched. Or Jasper, Texas, which happened when we were in kids. It didn't happen to us. It didn't, you know, there were no white camps. There were Chinese camps. There were black camps. There's Asian, there's this big controversy going on right now with North Korea. We finally found out that there's Asian working camps, which is just like, and what did we say after the Holocaust? Never again.
Yeah.
And but they're in the UN's just going back and forth trying to figure out what to do. They're acknowledging it, but they have no solution for it. So it's stuff like that. To me, it's this. It's
2014. How the hell don't you have a solution? For
well,
some
it's well, you well, anyway. Not to get off subject, but if you are not black, you should not be dropping the word. But it also, I think if you are black and you are dropping the word.
You can't get mad at other people for saying it. That's how I feel.
No, I don't think so. I just think that it implies a certain lack of, a certain ignorance. You know, and I say that at the same time, but then Kendrick Lamar, you know, is one of my favorite artists, and I can, like, literally one of my favorite artists right now. And, you know, most of his shit is, it's just, like, splurted in, and I find myself
saying it sometimes.
No, not at all. I avoid it. No, I memorize lyrics. I replace, if you want to know the truth, I replace the word. With people, whenever I cover his songs,
I think so. I've
like,
heard
my, you know, like that one. All my life, I spent money. I spent my life. There's no shower. What's the one line he says? All you peoples is when all my peoples. I just replace the word with people, like. And that's just my solution. But again, I don't feel like entitled. Like I should be able to say the word. It's like why? It's so full of fucking hate anyway.
It is.
Why is anybody saying
it is?
But at the same time, I'm not a black man, and I was never my. Father was not a slave.
I mean,
my grandfather, you know what I'm saying?
Like, it just recycles itself. I mean, you know, obviously we don't use it the same in the same sense, and it is messed up because it's.
But
it's
it,
like,
is, it is empowering for culturally for you to be able to turn it around. Like that's what I see. That's what I see
it.
Is that instead of it being this word full of hate, it's they flipped it around and made it cool. And now, if you say it, if I say it. It is more fucked up than it ever was.
It's not even.
Not only can you not say it, but you're not allowed to say you are not in this club. You know what? Fuck. Let them fuck. Take it.
That's dope.
Take it.
But at the same time, it's
like,
you can't sit here and say because a lot of black people, like when they would say it, their parents would get mad and be like, "Don't say that." You know what I'm saying? But they'll be like, "Oh, we're not using it in that sense." And then as soon as a white person says it, then that same person wants to get
all
mad.
All hell breaks loose.
But it's like you can't do that. You can't act like this word is okay for you. And
well, being called
a
jive turkey. Back in the day, it used to be the biggest fucking deal ever.
Yeah, like we've all seen Semi-Pro. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
you remember that scene?
No, yeah, forget. But for real, like the words change. You know what I mean? Like, cause that word, the swastika was a peace symbol. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they flipped it.
Things change.
But
and
we
now
put it
you,
in so much music and TV, and in the media that now all these races are, you know, picking it up. They feel like it's okay, and then We're not saying anything.
Well,
about
again,
it
the word has taken on a new meaning. So, like, honestly, like this is almost an outdated discussion. Like, it's the words take, like, you got white because of, you know, groups like Odd Future and Tyler the Creator. You got white kids literally wishing they were born black.
Yeah, which is just a lot of them. Crazy.
Like, it's really interesting, though. Sure. It's very, very interesting if you think about that.
Yeah,
though. Like.
Well, I mean, and that speaks to
and
how,
wanting to use the word because they feel like it's like
cool
because you're part of the club and the culture that I think hip hop has cultivated,
and rightfully so,
yeah.
Because culturally, the like an album like Yeezus would have never been able to get released in the 90s. That would not have existed. How come you can't name me more than one black rock and roll band from the 90s?
Yeah,
seriously.
But technically,
they were there. They were there.
They were there.
Living Color. It's the only one you could think of, right?
Yeah.
How the fuck did that happen? It's like little things like that is what I'm saying. It's like that was only, and that was only 14 years ago. It just because it's.
And
just,
you know what I don't like? Living Color, and you, I mean, you could probably attest to this, is a great band. They're a really good band, but they will always be known, well, for Cult of Personality, but for. They were the black rock and roll band.
Yeah.
Now, like, my dad was telling me this story recently how. That's what it came from. Now, my dad was telling me a story recently about how he. He went to a Charlie Pride concert. Charlie Pride's a country singer from back in the day, right?
Sure.
First time he was ever in Houston, right? And this is back before television was everywhere and magazines. It was just radio, and then I'd go see the show, right? You know? So my dad goes to see the show, and Charlie Pride comes out at the Astrodome, sells it out almost, comes out to the Astrodome, and you could have heard a pin drop. Nobody knew he was black, right?
Yeah.
And he comes out, and he was like, "Were you expecting somebody else?" And then started playing, you know, and then everyone went wild. But every time I hear Charlie Pride, I think, oh, he was the black country singer.
Yeah.
And I think this is how we're conditioned to remember that. You, I mean, even like Living Color, I automatically think, oh, yeah, they were the.
But it is what it is because there weren't any other black bands getting exposed. And like I said, there's. If you read between the lines, it's not a fucking coincidence. You know, that's all I'm trying to say.
It's not.
That's why I appreciate people like Kanye doing what he's doing because it's artistic. But he also, I think Kanye's got a very finite understanding. I would not doubt his intelligence at all, his self-aware of what you can and couldn't or can do now that you couldn't do.
Before.
And I think he's using that to his advantage, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's fucking brilliant. Tyler the Creator. It's Trent Reznor and it's Marilyn Manson and it's Eminem. All three of those guys are white. Tyler the Creator would not have been able to come out in the 90s. You know what I mean? Like it's a culture. So I think musically, you know, hip hop and black culture and culture in general, even what's happening with Maybach, you know, the Latina Maybach movement, all that kind of stuff. This stuff would not have been allowed to happen, like at all.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And you know, you were talking about, you know, your set and your music. You know, when you play, you have a lot of hip hop inspired things. You know, you're talking about covering Kendrick Lamar. Where did your love of hip hop come in?
Being in the South and my mom. She literally, we would drive to the store. I was raised very religiously. We drive to the store, listen to Christian rock. We go in the store. We come out. Somebody made her mad in the store, so she has to, you know, change the music. So she'd put on Nate Dogg or Warren G. And so West Coast rap is what I was introduced to first. And she whether or not she realizes it, but she had such an eclectic. Taste
That's
in
so
music,
tight.
It was really, really nuts, and she never. That's the one of the earliest memories I have is like literally my mom's like, or what's that? Not Jazz Prince or Jay. I am a dope fiend and I do drugs. I got it from the hood of the bar. Jazz Red. Like that's one of the first songs I ever remember hearing. It was like it says a lot about where I was living or the way I grew up. And it was on the radio, and I just remember, like, you know, that, but we were, oh, I want to tape that. And
I want to
like,
tape that. This generation, what is the cassette tape?
A mixtape. Right.
Right.
But no, I mean.
A mixtape is something Lil Wayne
I grew
started.
Up around it, so I grew up listening to hip-hop.
That's what's
and, that. So, and then when I went to New York, it really kicked in. It was really weird. I think I latched onto
they
it because
love
of
hip-hop
writing.
Over.
Well, that's where it started.
That's where it started.
It was awesome. I mean, it really was, but. Nah, I started writing raps because it helped me write faster.
Uh-huh.
Like it's never the problem's never been having ideas; it's always been organizing or getting them out fast enough or in a way that you know makes sense. So I started rapping because I could write really, really quick.
So what would you consider yourself as a musician? Like what's your
piano player?
piano player.
Yeah. You mean like genre-wise?
Yeah.
If I had to say it, I like funk, blues, and soul. It's definitely blues, core. Soul. Yeah, I wouldn't say hip-hop. I wouldn't say R&B. I don't have a pretty smooth voice. It's not rock and roll. It is rock, but my core is like funk, blues, and soul. I love James Brown. I love Ray Charles.
I would say funk.
And I love Dr. Dre.
From what I heard.
So, you know, you love James Brown, and I'll tell you this, because it'll probably be a topic of conversation that you could bring up.
Sure.
Booker T's wife, Charmel, she was on the show last week. She toured with James Brown as his backup dancer for 3.5 years.
I got to bring that up.
She'll tell you off the record, she'll tell you so many stories. Just go ahead. But okay. we'll move past that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, when first time I saw you, I was like just wandering around Montrose area. Okay. I would just see you all the time, and I remember a friend of mine named Jeremiah was like, "Oh, that's Mantis. That's Mantis. That was your name to me for a long time."
That was that's what it was for a long time.
Yeah, and everyone was like, "Well, that's Mantis. It's Mantis." And then I remember meeting you with like the Nice Guys or something like that, and you and Nice Guys and like Jack Freeman and all the y'all were all kind of in this Wire Road family is what I always heard.
Yeah, that was back before the studio was even open. And James Kelly, like I blame that all on James Kelly. Like he's responsible for the Nice Guys really. Me and Todd are waiting tables with Buca de Beppo. And he heard
Buca
me
Peppo.
Singing a Lupe hook, and something that you could never achieve. The fighters all around. That's
okay.
All.
Okay.
And he was like, "You could sing." I was like, "Yeah, I think I try." And he was like, "Well, we got this hook. You know, we need you to spit on." And I was like, "Okay, whatever." And that's how we met. And it just so happened to be at James Kelly's house, and it just so happened to be. Actually, I take that back. It was actually Baron Studios before they'd even met James Kelly.
And oh, wow.
I was falling out with Sugar Hill, and they were falling out with Baron. And Todd was like, Christoph, he was like, "You should meet James." And we went to his house, and that was a couple years ago. So, and that's how all that started. We were all just there, and we all just went to shows. It was very organic. Like, we were just friends, and we just noticed that we were all trying really hard, and there were a lot of other people who weren't trying as hard as us, so we just kind of like, let's do this. Let's play shows together. But, of course, I was in a rock band. They were all rappers. And yeah. Like, so, but they didn't, like, turn their backs on me. Like, they really embraced it, so it was nice.
So how's it to go from, like, recording at James Kelly's house to seeing this multi-million-dollar studio that's Wire Road now?
Right.
It's indescribable. Like, I remember the first time we went, we all got teary-eyed, and we were just like, are we allowed, like, is it, like, are you being for real? Like, we're allowed to be in here?
Yeah, because when I walked in there, I'm like, what?
You should have seen our faces, because he came out of, his house was nice. It was a nice studio, $30,000 worth of equipment. And he was like, we're building a studio. We're like, oh, yeah, sure.
Right, whatever,
sure.
Yeah, man.
We knew he was building. We're like, yeah, whatever, you're building a studio.
A lot of people talk.
We were like, whoa, shit. Like, it's overwhelming. So
that is crazy.
That's pretty dope.
Tommy took me to the studio, and I just remember looking around. But the thing about it is, it's a top of the line recording studio. But then, like, the backyard makes you feel like you're in a backyard at a house.
Well, he built it like a home, because that's the thing. They're attracting artists. They're not trying to attract business, because that was never a problem. You build a studio like that in a city like this, there's only one of three studios like that. There's the secret layer, you know, the Rap-A-Lot studio, and there's Sugar Hill, and there's Wire Road. That's it. Everything else is irrelevant, in my opinion. Like, there's nothing better than those three studios, and Wire Road is the best.
Wire Road's such a top-notch building, facility. It's just, it's an amazing,
it's like, wow.
And to record in there, I'm sure, is amazing. I haven't had the privilege.
It's awesome. Like, it's yeah, I mean, it's. I don't recommend any other place. Like I said, I grew up going to Sugar Hill, and it was cool. But meeting James and knowing what he's doing, and I know there's nicer studios in the world, but as far as Houston is concerned, and that's not the only reason we go there, is because it is the nicest, but it is. Like,
it is.
It is the nicest.
It is. Like, it's just a happy coincidence.
My God, I know you love that grand piano.
Oh, you've no idea. That Steinway, me and that Steinway have had some moments.
Oh, it's a Steinway in there?
Yeah.
I talked to that thing.
Oh,
I had to film myself.
It's not just a Steinway. I'm not going to drop the number on it. but it is.
I know how much
it
those cost.
It is one of the
best
pianos I've ever touched in my life. I have to touch that piano when I go
Most
there,
definitely.
And it feels like it's playing you. It's ridiculous.
Most
now
definitely.
I've heard some stuff about Steinways that you have to keep the room at a certain temperature so it doesn't get out of.
Well, that's mostly any acoustic instrument and pianos in general, like humidity, moving it, bumping it, all that stuff is very, very, very. But the way I describe Steinways is like you don't buy a Maserati and drive it through the mud. Okay,
exactly.
So that's the difference. Like we got a Yamaha at the Corkscrew, but that's because it gets touched, it gets bumped. People put their drinks on it because it's a bar environment. So you got to expect that. They were ready to buy a Steinway, and that was literally the comparison. I said you don't want to put a Maserati in a club, or somewhere we can get keyed, or you know, like you just
and
don't.
It's just a ridiculous. I mean, I know how much a Steinway costs. That's It's a ridiculous amount of money.
It's like night and day. It and the quality, and you know, because you play the piano.
Yes.
It is so hard to describe. Like that's why I compare it to cars. It's like my Camry works great.
My
Camry will give me
feel the difference.
You literally can
feel the difference between pianos.
And it makes you a better player. Like when you're playing on something like that, it's
oh my god.
It's just so hard to describe. It really is. Yeah.
Man, yeah.
Yeah.
You had a moment.
And there's one in Wire Road that you can play whenever you want to.
Oh, dog.
Man, this is that big ass booth. I'm like, oh, this is heaven. I need to come here and just practice.
Yeah. Room A, just so yeah.
It's nice to say the least.
Well, but what's been going on? I know Mantis was the name of the band for a while, but now it's Nick Greer and the G's. I will say you've put together such a talented band from your drummer, your violinist, who's amazing. You've put together a talented band.
Well, thank you. It's come a long way.
Maybe in like the last 2 years, maybe 2 years ago is when you changed it to 2012 is when it was the G's, right?
I took it from Mantis and together the G's. That was some long-winded advice, or not long-winded, but a long-time-coming advice from Ezra Charles and a few other people. But it just made more sense to do it because there was no way to market it, first of all. And second of all, I'd be at that time – every single person in my band was a hired gun. I was the only person in the band from the original, if you want to call it that, Mantis lineup. So it was just there were a number of reasons to change it that were all for the good, for the better. And the biggest one was, I want to put out albums, but if you search Mantis on iTunes, you get 5 metal bands, you get 5 hip hop groups. Like there's that right off the bat, there was no. There's no way to market it at all. There's no way to find me. You know what I mean? And so I remember sitting the band down and being like, you guys mind if I change the name to Nick Greer and the G's? And they were like, well, are we going to get paid the same? And I was like, yeah.
All right, name it whatever
the
fuck you want.
Okay, like, because, you know, they were hired and I wrote it. I don't know. It just made more sense. And instead,
why
so what is the G's? Yeah.
Well, that's because my last name is Greer. And I kind of took from James Brown the J-O-B's. It's just trying to be simple. And I wrote down 3 different names. And like one of them was Nick Greer and the H, I don't know, something stupid.
Yeah,
but
Nick Greer and the Hughes.
Yeah, the Hughes or something. But I kept thinking about, okay, if it's the G's, what could we do with that? I'm a G, G'd out, G style, how to be a G.
Right.
You know, so there's
G funk.
There's a million. These are the G's. Why are they called the G's? Because they're worth 1,000 words. Like I worked all that stuff out to where I literally went. It just made sense.
Yeah,
you know what
it
I mean?
Does.
But it was a take from James Brown and the J.O.B.'s. I just thought it was a good.
And what are you though currently? I know you have some. You're gonna bring some new music, but you want to keep it under wraps.
Yeah, we are working.
You
want to
keep it on the hush.
A new record called Heart on Fire. We've actually already tracked it, and we're mixing. And we got very lucky with the people that were involved. We got Jazz Mafia from California involved. We got a 15-piece orchestra, or I'm sorry, 15-piece choir, 30-piece orchestra. So we got like Brad Sales. Trust me, bro. Like. It's not, to say the least, it's going to open up doors for everybody in the band, which some of us have kids on the way, not me.
Yeah.
But a lot of us need this, you know what I mean? So it's not like a make it happen, be cool, be Nick Greer. I don't give a shit about any of that. Like, it is like, I feel like I've got a family of people relying on me, not to mention my mother and my sister. And it's like I told myself I was going to make this work,
right?
No matter what. And now it's at that level to where it's no longer like we already got out of the garage, you know, already got a job, I can already pay my rent. But now it's like, how do I take care of these people that have put me in this position? How do I give it all back to them and take care of these grown ass men in my band? And this album will do that. Like, that was the goal. Not, it was to set a new standard in Houston, but to open up doors for people, everybody involved, particularly the group that that were involved. But it is literally, like, what I hope that it accomplishes, and you know, one thing it does is that it, I hope it scares the shit out of everybody in Houston, all the artists, and makes them go, oh shit,
we have to step it up.
Like, we have to do that or better.
Yeah,
you which set is the good bar because high. That's what the city needs.
Yeah.
Like, it, the artists have to. I used to blame the city for not paying attention to me. Houstonism, fuck all that. It is on us. It is up to the artists. We have got to step it up. We got to quit playing bullshit shows. We got to quit playing bullshit, you know, with ourselves. We got to step it up. Like,
so,
be
do
like,
you think that you take this album elsewhere to like L.A.? And
oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it's no. Our goal is national attention, license, like everything across the board, radio, licensing. Like, no, we're not holding ourselves back at all. But again, we all know what Houston's like, and we're all from Houston.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, I've noticed, you know, that with Houston, sometimes you do have to reach out other places, and once Houston sees that other places are really actually jamming your music and actually, you know, being involved with you, then Houston jumps on the bandwagon. That's what I've noticed about Houston. I really hope that it changes.
Well, it is what it is. It's the South. That's what I try to tell people from LA and New York. It's... We've got things that work against us, but so does LA and New York.
Definitely. I don't think it's. I'm here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm
but
down
when,
south.
But when, just like what you said, when Houston, but the beautiful thing about it is, and I can only think of, like, you know, the most of this happening in hip hop, you know, in Houston. But when Houston gets behind you, you got a whole. It's not like in New York or LA where you're like, oh, have you heard about this guy? He's in this part of town. It's like, no, if you can get Houston behind you, you've got 6 million people behind you. I mean, like, literally, definitely, that love you, that want you to make it, because you're representing them, and they know that we how hard it is. Because Southern, we're picky, man. Like,
Barry,
the South is harsh.
that's what I'm saying. Don't get me wrong. I'm here for a reason. I mean, obviously, I could easily take my little black ass back to L.A. and do it. But I will say, here is more homey. Everybody is more like a family. Once they are a part of your movement, they are really a part of your
it's
movement.
It's extremely communal and not cliquish. I say that very lightly, though. You know, so
I can definitely say that. I mean, so that's good. I just wanted to know if you were going to go over and actually expand, because I feel
the
music I've already heard, even the shows that I've already seen, would be awesome over there. And one thing
I can't agree with you more.
Say is that in Houston, everybody's grind is on 100 compared to LA. LA, everybody is so used to handouts and everything being open for them and stuff like that, that they don't actually have that work ethic. And I can say that Houston actually taught me how to have that work ethic. And
I always tell artists that if you can get a, if you, like, because of the few times I did move away, it was because I felt like, you know what? I know I'm hustling really hard. And I feel like I know that if I was doing this in New York or LA,
it happened right
doors would just be flopping. So those are the few times where I actually branched out, which was really just to see what it was like. And it is worlds of difference. It actually made me sad.
Yeah.
You know, because it is so much more. I mean, I spent a week in LA during Thanksgiving, not even there for business. Ended up getting 50 fucking phone numbers for people that are still calling me, still wanting
That's
to talk.
What
like, in like, so if you can, like, I feel like if you can get 100 people to come to your show in Houston, then you're doing
something good.
And but you know how hard that is? It's like boot camp. That's what I describe Houston as, is boot camp.
Definitely.
If you want to learn how to
That's
hustle,
I appreciate Houston.
Go to Houston and try to get 50 people to come to your show. Like, or
if they come, you know, you're on.
And so yeah, it's just a different energy, man. You
but
know?
Now that you have your product, you have that album, I think it'll be really good for you to go.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Push it.
But I'm never gonna forget where I came from, and this is Houston. It is Houston. You're gonna hear it and say, oh, they're from Houston. At least I think so. You know?
Do you hope so?
I want people to know. I want people to know it's from Houston. It drives me crazy that, you know, we don't have enough national attention, like, at all. You know, we got Beyonce, and Dennis Quaid went to Bel Air, and, you know, all that shit happened in the 90s with hip hop. But man, damn, it's 2014.
It's coming up though. Houston's
It is, but I want more for the city. Like, I like the fact that Free Press Summerfest this year decided not to go with local acts that have already previously performed. I think it's great. It pissed a lot of people off, but I say fuck it. Slap, like, that's what they need.
I think it's
they
time
need
for
to be told, you know,
to
what?
Expand.
Get national attention, and then you can play Free Press. Why not? You had 6 years to do it before. why not? Why is that such a so what? You know what I mean? Like, why not? It makes you step it up because, like, well, shit, I got to be touring now.
It's like I see a lot of recognition for Houston, like, you know, in the R&B, hip-hop world. I'm ready for another genre to really, like, show.
And hopefully that's what we will be able to accomplish. Because, again, I'm not a rapper. There's no rap verses on this record. There's no sampling. It's not a hip-hop group. There's no guest stars. But the next record is going to be crazy. we've already started working on it.
Let's just throw that in there.
We've already started working. I've been working on an idea in my head for a long time, and we finally started be able to figure it out. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting.
Well, I'm excited. When's this current record gonna come out though?
We're thinking June. There's nothing. You're gonna start seeing singles drop pretty soon. But it's Hard on Fire, and that's all I can really say.
Oh, are we gonna have any visuals?
Oh yeah, you're gonna start seeing visuals and stuff like that. But we're basically, we've kept it so underground that everything that all the medium is pretty much already going to be done.
Good.
Like, we've already shot the making. We already shot the live version of the album. The album's already recorded. We've already got the art getting worked on. So it's not going to be like a just drop it. It's going to be dropped, and then everything's going to be lined up. Like, it's at least that's the plan. But June would be ideal.
Nick Greer, we appreciate you coming on the show, man. When the record drops, you're more than welcome back so we can break it down track by track. Yes.
Sounds awesome.
Get into the mind of the madman.
And we're going to have a listening party pretty soon at Wire Road, which, of course, you guys are all welcome to come to.
Yes.
Appreciate it. We'll definitely be there. We will definitely be there. Nick Greer, who is Nick Greer? Is your Instagram and Twitter?
Am I allowed to say my Twitter name?
Yeah.
It's Dick Queer.
It's Dick Queer.
I guess we were cursing a lot, so.
Yeah, Dick Queer is your...
I was
Instagram
like
or Twitter.
Too.
That's Don't my Instagram. It was a crude nickname that I embraced when I was younger. It was Dickless Queer, but that was too long.
Dickless Queer.
Is Nick Greer is the Twitter.
Dickless.
So I have a clean Instagram too.
Who is Nick Greer?
It's Who is Nick Greer? So
okay, we'll definitely go follow him, and we look forward to the record "Hard on Fire" coming in June.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Yes.
go back to it.
Like, to be honest, I know a lot of girls that have never, like, they do the cocktail. My mom worked in a like, as a cocktail waitress. That girl Bianca was a cocktail waitress. And they don't cross the line, which they don't need to. But they when the girls, when they cross the line and they're they finally in. Get on stage, yeah. they're just they're like, in. Well, okay.
And they make and then more
when
money.
They fuck somebody, it it's like, okay, well,
and they make more money. They make more money. Because
they get
like,
up, they get up, they get over. They're already up there. They already did it.
What are, like, what are y'all's views on strip clubs, though? Because they've changed. They've changed. Minds have changed.
I think if strip clubs are legal porn or prostitution should be legal porn, like all that shit, like, I don't get it.
I had agreeance with that.
I don't see how stripping should be legal and then prostitution is illegal. It's the same fucking thing.
I kind of agree with that, yeah.
It's the same thing. You're still selling your body. You just may not be being touched, but they still see your shit.
Well, I'm pretty sure strippers get touched.
Yeah. Some of them do.
Strippers get, they let you.
Strippers get boned.
And they don't catch you.
Oh, God.
If you have enough money, if you look good enough, they will.
You know what the ultimate...
Okay, I'll tell you a story. I shouldn't say this. I'm so glad we're not recording any of this.
Oh, God. I'm kind of recording this.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. So, when I was younger, the stripper, I did it. I never went inside. I refused to go inside. You know, like... I hate... Like,
you mean
inside the club? I hate.
Okay. Oh, I think inside of her.
No, that was a different story. But I didn't. I never liked strip clubs. You know what I mean? It's never been like a thing for me. Never wanted to fuck a prostitute. Now.
Yeah, me neither.
You know what I mean? Like, it sounds nice, but then when you actually try, if you've ever tried to pursue it, it gets really scummy really quick, and you're like, oh, I'm doing this.
You
no,
took
like
a really sharp right turn and the no.
You have to really, really be ready to like do that shit. Unless you've just done it before, you're just like a cold sandwich. So
oh, once she puts lips down, I'm like, whoa! Bad idea.
So I grew up feeling that way. I also have a theory about blowjobs. I grew up feeling that way. Like, strip clubs are the most disgusting place on earth. It's just gonna be shut down, blah 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 blah. Now
run to the store and go get
it. I got one. There's two more in there.
Yes,
rock and
out.
Roll. Rock and you can. No. Maybe you've got too many.
Okay. But.
Okay, so, like, just never, you know, never. Like, no, I'm never gonna go in there. I'm never gonna fuck a hoe. I'm never gonna pay for a lap dance. None of that shit. And, that shit changed about 2 months ago. Oh, I'm just being honest with you.
Okay.
What?
Okay. Okay. Well, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I'm not saying I fuck hoes all the time. I'm just saying.
I'm not saying that.
I don't fuck hoes all the time.
I'm not going to say that aloud. But
don't make me laugh while I'm drinking, bro. That's just nothing.
No. Okay. So, like I said, I changed my whole life like 2 months ago. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something I'm missing. You know. Kind of like first time I smoke pot, you know?
Ooh, love it.
So my boys, they are experienced in the stripper, the realm of stuff.
The realm of the strip clubs.
They're novice. They're not novice, okay? So we went to a strip club.
Yeah.
And it was so fucking awesome. I can't tell you. We went to 5 more after that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, damn.
You spent a lot of money that night.
Way too much money. I'm glad I'm okay to do that right now. But where I'm going with this is... Yes, you can touch them. Okay?
They can be touched.
And I remember, okay, so when we first got there, I was so nervous. I was just like, I'm just going to be cool. You know, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do none of this. And they're like, just sit down. They come up to you. And I'm like, this is cool. There's so much just titties and everything. I'm going to sit my happy ass down and just be cool. You know, I was like, I'm paying for everything. It was like, gave my friends money so they don't have to ask me for shit. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know, so what do we do now? And they were like, just chill.
Just chill, man. Just chill.
And this girl, you know, sure enough, she comes up to me, and she's like, you want to laugh? And I was like, yes, I do. And so...
More than you will ever know at this point.
So we go to the lap dance area.
Yeah.
And
VIP.
She's already half naked, and I'm still trying to be a gentleman, you know? Like, she's like, ooh. I'm like, this is so nice. And I'm like... I was like, I put my hands, I was like, am I allowed to touch you? And she's like, oh yeah. And I'm like, pow. And
oh my God, no, I have a story for y'all asses.
But then I was like, can I put my mouth on you? Like, can I suck on the titties a little, just a little, you know, like, can I get a little.
Little peck peck.
I swear I had to ask, you know, you don't just.
I mean, that's nice. Rude. Very gentlemanly.
Oh my God.
So I was like, you know, I'm already, like, can I She's like, no.
No. $100.
She was like, we're not VIP, sweetie. And I was like, hi. And I was about to say how much. I was like, I know. Yeah, you're right. So I'm like, I'm just going to enjoy this.
I love the visual of this.
Yeah, you like, you can visualize.
It was so funny. I was like, I'm going to take my glasses off because I don't want you to cut your boobies. I was being really nice.
You're being as gentleman as really you nice. Can. I took off my glasses before I motorboated the stripper.
And you know our piano player, like, Callie, like,
yeah.
The hair. He's so, like, quiet. The nigga didn't do anything. Nice. He didn't care about anything. Oh, so we took him to a strip club in L.A. And when we were in L.A., it was his birthday. And it was like the strip club we went to, they couldn't take off their bottoms. But they could take off their tops. Right? But people in Houston are used to them getting ass naked.
We've got full nude clubs here. Which
right.
Is a pretty big deal.
Which is crazy. So anyway, long story short, the stripper's like in front of him and she's like dancing in front of him. She takes his head and puts it in her cooch and shakes his head in her cooch. So all you see is his head like.
And he's got that big hair.
I was dying so hard. I was like, I cannot breathe. Like, all you see is his head is like, and she's like holding his head. He's like.
She was holding it, so she was kind of sunning him too.
Yes!
You're gonna get this if you like it.
You're gonna learn today.
Wow.
That's too good. Hey, bless her.
Oh, bless her.
Blessings
out to that woman.
The sweet lady that took care of me.
I'm a female. I've been in the locker room with different bitches. I know that people's shit stank. Like,
yeah,
you don't know
no.
This hoe. Like,
but she took control.
She sunned that motherfucker. She's like,
But what if it smelled horrible?
What if it was dirty? Shit you can do about it.
He was stuck. He was stuck.
Batman's kicking your ass. What you gonna do?
What a great way to put that in the career. If Batman's kicking your ass, what are you gonna do? Take the ass beating. There's nothing you can do to stop
Booker
it.
Booker says lay down. It doesn't matter where you are. You're on the freeway.
You're okay. I don't want any problems.
You just lay. If you sit, lay down.
Oh, man. That shit's funny.
Oh, wow. That was nice. Pause.
So I ended up fucking.